They laughed at me. No, really. They laughed at me as I went through airport security 20 years and almost a month ago. I had two footlockers full of stuff, which wasn't the funny part. However, the umbrella got the security guards chuckling. My mother had always taught me well. Always take an umbrella with you when you travel. You see, in August, when I boarded the plane, there is no rain in Israel. Thus, the guards were having fun laughing at my Temple University umbrella, wondering when I might use it. It took about 6 weeks, but I actually did use that umbrella, because, like clockwork, the rain came during Sukkot. The umbrella was somewhat amusing, but at that point in my life, I began a relationship with Israel that, like the umbrella, has some laughter and has some practical issues. It continues to be strong and, when appropriate, critical. It is an honest relationship and one that is always seeking inspiration. Like the situation with the umbrella, when we go to a new place, we have to accept that we are neophytes, that things might be strange and unusual. But that is why we go. For me, that umbrella was useful because it spoke of my lack of understanding of Israel. And then it also eventually kept me from getting too wet as I spent the next year living in the Holy Land during one of the wettest winters in 10 years. Israel. The word itself evokes emotions, and almost no one can say the word without having at least an opinion, if not a feeling. The name itself is one that was given to Jacob after he wrestled the divine being to a draw on the night before he had to face his brother Esau. The name comes from the quote, Vayomer lo Yaakov yemer od shimcha ki im Yisrael ki sarita im Elohim ve'im anashim v'tuchal. And the being said, they will no longer call you Jacob, but Israel, for you are able to lisrot, to wrestle or dwell with both God and humans. I find myself drawn to Israel this year more than most, drawn because it is the 60th year of the existence of the State of Israel, and it is the 20th year since I first boarded that plane to set foot on Israeli soil. The common struggle that Israel faced in history and continues to face today is not whether or not to laugh at the 20-year-old college kid with the umbrella, but struggling to live up to that name, Israel. This is the privilege and burden that is our yoke in the world. I love Israel for the fantastic things it represents. When I was a college student, that is, poor, I found an incredible blessing living in Israel. I could buy lunch for almost nothing, and I somehow managed to survive on just a couple dollars a day. However, for those of you who are sending children today, inflation might have changed things just a little bit. As I walked through Jerusalem, I was at first lost due to the maze of the city. Having gone to school in Philadelphia, where the streets had names, and they were laid out on an organized grid, Jerusalem was a challenge. Literally, and perhaps somewhat metaphorically, I began to look up. No, I wasn't searching for God, though if God had shown up, I would have bought lunch. But in Jerusalem, with all of its winding roads and twisting alleys, I learned how to find myself by looking for the towers and other tall structures that broke the tree line. Thus did I learn how to find my place by looking to the heavens, as do many who arrive in the Holy Land, though I wasn't always searching for God. I struggle with Israel because of certain moments in her past. Israel has had to face some of the difficult choices each regular nation of the world faces. It has had wars and conflicts. The air raid sirens sound once a year as a test. And ironically, these are the same sirens used to announce Shabbat in Jerusalem. When I studied in Israel a second time as a rabbinical student, I was asked by my Hebrew teacher, Sima, "Did you learn enough Hebrew this year?" I responded that I had not. She looked at me somewhat quizzically and wanted to know what I had not learned. I responded that I felt inadequate to discuss Israeli politics and suggested that perhaps one additional word in my vocabulary might help rectify the situation. "Which word?" she asked anxiously. I answered, "Bribery." Granted, it had been a rough year for Israeli politics in 1990 with the collapse of the unity government between Peres and Shamir, but still the word was indicative of the struggle I had. Not that we would ever face such a situation in the United States. Still, when we are charged to be righteous and to be a light unto the nations, it would be better if we didn't have to use such words to discuss the ridiculous political shenanigans that get in the way of our ancient charge. I love Israel because the lessons we have learned, sometimes brutally, inform how we act today. In 2006, an article appearing in the Jewish Week out of New York reported, "Israel has opened its doors to non-Jewish refugees on its own initiative twice. In the early 1980s, when hundreds of Cambodian Bo people were admitted and given citizenship, and in the 1990s when Kosovar Muslims were granted temporary shelter in Israel. 1,200 political asylum applicants are given work permits while they're considered every year. 99% are rejected. Meanwhile, Africans fleeing strife-torn countries like Sierra Leone and Chad have received work permits in Israel, even though they won't necessarily qualify for political asylum. Israel, more than any other nation, is exhorted by God to welcome the stranger in her midst. You shall not oppress the stranger nor wrong them, for you were strangers in the land of Egypt." While we know that Nazi Germany hated Jews, what many of us don't know is that Hitler was originally willing and ready to allow the entire population of Jews to leave Germany without harm. It was only after his first plan, deporting all the Jews, failed, that he embarked on what we now know as the final solution. Sadly, tragically, he was not the last tyrant to embark on such a solution, as we now hear of millions displaced in Darfur. What is Israel's response? This past month, I again was touched by the actions of Israel. Israel intends to grant citizenship to several hundred refugees from Darfur who are currently in the country, Interior Minister Shatrit said Tuesday. Shatrit said that his ministry has begun laying the groundwork for implementing the plan, which includes a thorough investigation of every refugee from Darfur residing in Israel. We know what it means to be refugees, fugitives in a strange land. Can you imagine the howls from certain members of the American government if one of our cabinet secretaries decided to allow 15 to 20,000 Darfur refugees into our country? As we begin our Passover Seder every year, my father was a wandering fugitive Aramean. Israel is a country schooled in the suffering of the refugee. At least in Israel, the refugee has a chance to find a place called home. I love Israel because Israel has sought to help the meekest, even at a cost to itself. The following story is from the BBC But I think we could all find a Jewish value in this story, and we could all identify with the pain, suffering, and the righteousness and mercy involved. The BBC reported Maria cannot kick her legs or even feel the water she's floating in. She's permanently attached to a ventilator. Maria was paralyzed from the neck down by an Israeli rocket attack in May 2006. The missile was aimed at a leader of the armed Islamic Jihad movement who was killed outright. So were Maria's mother, her grandmother, and 7-year-old brother who were driving past at the time. Maria was blown through the car window, suffering severe injuries. Israeli law denies compensation to victims of what it calls acts of war. However, Israel's Defense Ministry has been paying for her rehabilitation treatment at a special hospital in Jerusalem. First, and let's be clear, in similar situations where Israeli children have been caught up in attacks, Palestinian terrorists have murdered the adults and the children in cold blood. Israel seems to act differently. Even with no reason to help Maria, due to the circumstances of the situation, Israel is the reason this little girl is alive. In fact, the head of the hospital in Jerusalem said, "We will not agree to discharge her until we are satisfied she will be adequately cared for elsewhere." Maria's life and future are tied to Israel for the time being. And it takes Israelis like that hospital administrator who will do the right thing as opposed to the convenient thing to truly live up to the name Israel. I struggle with Israel and what it means to be a kingdom of priests and a holy people. There are too many times when its kingdom of priests in the name of being a holy people hijacks the name Israel. Martin Buber, writing on ancient leadership, once remarked on the tension between the priestly class and the prophetic leaders. The problem with the priest was that they wanted to keep things the same. An unchanging world was their source of power. On the other hand, the prophets wanted change. They demanded that change occur, regardless of whose feathers got ruffled. The prophets were the lone voice in the wind that made people stand up and take notice. The priest told you to go along with their way, or things might get a lot worse than they are right now. When Rabbi Edgar Nof has the foresight to hire Ethiopian attorneys to represent Ethiopian clients in Haifa, from our sister congregation, Or Chadash. This is the prophetic voice being spoken to the population of Israel today. When the traditional establishment in Israel tells us that the world will be rent asunder if we do not capitulate to their way, this is the priest threatening the equilibrium of the world unless they get their way. The priest no longer sees himself as coming out of Egypt. The prophet realizes in every society that Egypt is lurking and waiting for an opportune moment to reassert itself. Israel is filled with both, and often Reformed Jews and common Israelis are the only ones who are speaking the prophetic voice to change and to strive for righteousness. I love Israel, because we learn so much about how we used to live and how similar we are today. I have a neighbor, and about 6 months ago, he got what I would call agrarian ambitious. He politely asked me if I would mind if he got 2 chickens. Apparently in Lower Merion, you can have 2 domestic fowl in the size of yards that we have. I thought about those chickens. I had images of being awoken at 4:30 in the morning to cock-a-doodle-doo and politely responded, I don't think so. somebody did point out to me that chickens don't actually say cock-a-doodle-doo, but let's face it, the eggs have to come from somewhere. So my neighbor, then undeterred, my neighbor asked me if he had any issues if he got a beehive. I thought to myself, bees. Bees. Quieter than chickens. They might buzz, but only during the day. Well, he now has a beehive in his backyard. And only one child has been stung. Mine. But recently it was discovered that Israel has had beehives for a number of years. At least 3,000, to be exact. It was reported in IsraelNationalNews.com, archaeologists digging south of Beit Sha'an in the Jordan Valley have uncovered, for the first time ever, beehives from the period of Israel's kings. The dig at Tel Rehov is located between the religious kibbutzim of Sedeh Eliyahu and Ein HaNatziv. It tells a heap of ancient ruins from different periods. Among the finds were hundreds of restorable vessels, figurines, cult stands, and the only beehives ever found at an excavation of an Iron Age site. The discovery of the beehives was made last summer, and it is the earliest beehive complex currently known. Professor Mazar says it is dated between 9th and 10th century BCE, around the time of King Solomon. The beehive complex was found to contain three rows of beehives, for a total of 30, and another 70 are believed to have been there as well. Each beehive was 80 centimeters, 32 inches long. It is shaped like a cylinder, 40 centimeters in diameter, and is made of clay and dried straw. Present-day beekeepers who visited the site estimated that a half ton of honey could be raised each year from the area that was excavated. I love Israel because we find out more about what we have in common throughout history. And my shared backyard with my neighbor and this archaeological site in Israel are linked. They are connected through the need for agriculture and the sweet comb that generations and different cultures have sought for centuries. More than just buildings and conflicts tie us together. We need to eat and have a source of honey. Just like ancient cultures dating back to the time of the kings of Israel. As you have gathered by now, living as Israel and having a relationship with Israel is at the same time a love and a struggle. The things I love about Israel are those things that reinforce our sacred and even mundane ties to the Jewish past. I struggle with difficult moments Israel has had to face, whether they are of her own doing or not. It is at this point that I want to extend an invitation to you. We are going to Israel next summer, June 19th through the 30th, as Beth David Congregation. We are going to connect with our ancient homeland and see where the prophets and priests walked and argued. Ours is a pilgrimage to a place that has transformed the Jewish world time and again, as we have shared in the blessings and struggles of history. If you do nothing else regarding Israel in your life, join us on this trip. Experience what it means to eat a modern luxury, a popsicle, as we sit on top of a 3,000-year-old ruin, or rock, or structure that King David would have seen. Join us in better understanding the loves and struggles of the only Jewish country on the face of this planet. Find your way to a place that has become and remains, for many, including myself, a spiritual home and inspirational destiny. One last note. Since we're going in June, don't pack your umbrella. Gemar Chatima Tova, may you be inscribed in the Book of Life, and may you be sealed in that book as well. Shana Tova.
The music you hear on this podcast is from Magnatunes.com and the group Panacea. Please go out there and check out their website. They have some wonderful tunes, and if you can download and purchase a copy for yourself from magnatunes.com.